WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio presents coronavirus special coverage. For WDIY News, this is James Johnson. WDIY is committed to providing accurate, updated information every Lehigh Valley resident needs to make informed decisions. COVID-19 information is rapidly changing. For the latest local information, go to WDIY.org or St. Luke's University website at slhn.org/COVID-19. We are grateful for our next guest's time to update and inform our listeners about the COVID-19 pandemic that has impacted the world, Pennsylvania, and the Lehigh Valley. Please welcome Senior Vice President of Medical and Academic Affairs with St. Luke's University Health Network and Chief Emeritus of Infectious Disease Specialists, Dr. Jeffrey Jerry. Doctor, what steps are St. Luke's University Health Network taking to prepare for the wave of possible cases in the next 10 days?
We have had a pandemic and epidemic plan that all hospitals should have in place and that we've had in place for many years. This plan is constantly being adjusted for the current threat, which is COVID-19. So what we have been looking at is everything from supplies to ventilators to what we are anticipating would be surge capacity. And we have plans to meet each one of those with the proper response.
How many ventilators does St. Luke's University Health Network have for incoming cases, and how many respirators for healthcare workers are available?
When you're referring to ventilators, we have over 300 ventilators, and that stock is also increasing right now through several different sources. Not everyone needs a ventilator, and for instance, there are certain patients that would be easily accommodated with what we call CPAP, and that would be adequate for people with moderate dysfunction or moderate respiratory distress. Currently, in terms of the proper masking for healthcare workers to use who are coming in contact with COVID patients, we have adequate supplies, and we are looking at ways of extending those supplies, anticipating that there could be a shortage, and there are a number of different avenues that we're taking to meet that.
Doctor, would you please explain the term triage and how St. Luke's University Health Network is screening cases of COVID-19?
What we're telling people to do is if they think they have symptoms, there are a number of different avenues for them to address those. The first thing is to call their primary care doctor. And don't just show up at the door, but to let the physician know that they are coming, and then they can be properly masked and the staff can be protected. If there is a necessity and the doctor will determine that by asking the appropriate questions, that patient may be directed specifically to go to an emergency room if there is an acute illness. We also know that patients can access care through what we call Care Now, which is our urgent care centers, and even through by getting certain directions by calling our hotline or utilizing virtual visits. So there are a number of different platforms for patients to be able to get the care that they need. Questions would be asked in terms of what their risk factors are, what their symptoms are, and they will be given proper advice accordingly.
Is there a higher risk of lung infection for younger residents who may smoke or vape?
The evidence that's coming out of China is very clear that smoking is a risk factor for more severe disease, and that is true irregardless of the age. So we can now utilize that information and say the same would certainly be true for vaping.
We will return after these messages.
This is Operations Director Neil Heaver. Healthcare workers around the nation are bravely battling the COVID-19 virus, and we all need to do our part to help. Many of the real voices you know at WDIY will be absent this spring as they heed the call to stay home and stay safe. Our staff and volunteers have faced challenges before, and I'm certain we'll get through this crisis. We'll continue to provide NPR news and a variety of music, and we will bring the many choices and real voices back as soon as possible. Our best wishes to you and your loved ones, and thank you for listening and supporting us at WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Jumbars 1342, Chelsea Avenue, Bethlehem. While Jumbars dining room is temporarily closed due to the current health crisis, they would like you to know they are still open for takeout orders, Tuesday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Further information and updates can be found at jumbars.com. or 610-866-1660.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Lehigh Pizza, 13 West 3rd Street, Southside Bethlehem, offering traditional and gourmet pizza along with hot and cold subs and sandwiches. Lehigh Pizza will remain open 7 days a week, but will only be offering takeout and delivery over the next 2 weeks. For full menu and delivery zones, lehighpizza.com or 610-866-1088.
We now return to Dr. Jeffrey Jerry. Please explain the infection curve, mortality rate, and what modeling of the virus means for Lehigh Valley residents.
So when we talk about infection curve, what you're really talking about are how many cases are you seeing at a given time and then how that is changing over a given period. And what you're looking for over there, you may have heard the term flattening the curve, because if you have large numbers of cases that are coming in all at once, then you have a surge and that can overwhelm your system. So one of the things that we're doing at this point in time is using what we call mitigation techniques, and that's what we are talking about when we encourage social distancing so that patients can do certain things that can certainly lessen the possibility that they're going to have the disease or that they'll all have it at once. That has been effective in other countries, and as you know, it has been started in this area with a number of different issues, such as closing the schools, asking that non-essential businesses be closed, and there are likely to be others. Mortality rate is based on how many people are dying versus how many people actually have the disease. And the initial statistics that came out of China seem to indicate that there could be a mortality of over 3%. However, what one needs to consider is that the only people that were tested were people who were majorly symptomatic. We know that there are many people that are out there who have minimal symptoms that are virtually negligible, and those people weren't being tested. Now that testing is more available, many of these people are being tested, and so that mortality rate has certainly come down. If you want to contrast that to influenza, where there's a mortality rate of 0.1%, I think most experts feel that the current estimate for this disease is about 1%, which is still a lot higher, but that might even come down further as we find out that there are a lot more people who have this, who have minimal symptoms, who have not been tested in the past. There's lots of different modeling computer data that's coming out. The difficulty is that you have to apply that to your own community, because if you're talking about a community like New York City, specifically New Rochelle, or Seattle, Washington, and certain areas in California, that's a lot different than other areas such as West Virginia or the Lehigh Valley.
And that has everything to do with community spread, I presume.
It has everything to do with community spread and density of population and underlying risk factors.
Are there contingency plans for MASH units, temporary care facilities, and is the National Guard coordinating with St. Luke's University Health Network?
So as part of our surge plan, there has to be considerations for using alternative sites and other facilities, cohorting of patients that have the same disease. And so all of those plans are in effect, and we do have a number of contingency plans to meet what might be an anticipated threat. All of these things are coordinated with governmental agencies, and we do follow the regulations that are stated by the Pennsylvania Department of Health, as well as by the federal government.
Various media outlets are reporting percentages of young people contracting the virus. Is this alarming for young people?
Well, there's a very important point to make over here. What we have been saying, and it's still true, that the people who are most at risk are the people who are elderly and that have underlying diseases that are chronic, such as heart disease, lung disease, kidney disease, diabetes, or other diseases that may compromise their immune system. It has been said in the past that younger people have a milder disease, and that in general is true. What has not been emphasized, though, is they are not exempt from getting this disease, and in fact, in some cases, the disease can be severe in younger people. This is a very important point to keep in mind, because we find that in some cases, people who are young, who are, let's say, under the age of 30, feel that they don't have to take part in any of these social distancing recommendations because they're not going to come down with a major disease. And that's a false premise. on at least two different reasons. One is the reason that you point out, that in some cases these people can in fact come down with severe disease, albeit at much less of a rate than those who are older. And the second is because they live with people and come in contact with people who are in a higher risk group, and that is older people and people who have compromised immune systems, they have the capacity then to spread that disease to those folks who might have a much more severe case. So the bottom line and the important lesson to be learned over here is that the recommendations apply to everyone. One of the things that I think is most important over here is to keep informed, and to keep informed by reputable sources. And I can give people a number of different ways of doing that. Our own health network, the St. Luke's Health Network, has a hotline where you can ask individual questions. You can go onto our website, and there is all kinds of information that's there that apply to specific situations. And there's also ways that you can ask directly by the Internet. In addition to that, there are governmental agencies that also have websites, and that includes Pennsylvania Department of Health and the Center for Disease Control, or CDC.gov. One of the things that I want to point out is the reason why we feel this is so important is because valid information helps keep people informed and keeps the alarm level from getting out of hand. And so I think an informed public is a public that's much better off and able to deal with the situation at hand.
We will return after these messages.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Baum School of Art, 510 Linden Street, Allentown. To ensure the safety of its students and staff, the Baum School will be closed until further notice. They will be offering certain classes and programs in a virtual environment. Further information on these classes, along with updates on the school's status, can be found at baumschool.org or on their social media.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Silvercrest Insurance. While Silvercrest Insurance is currently not conducting in-person meetings, they would like you to know that their team is ready and available to help you by phone at 610-868-5801. Other information and relevant updates can be found at silvercrestins.com.
We now return to Dr. Jeffrey Jerry. How are St. Luke's healthcare professionals' spirits and resolve?
We all have a respect for the disease, and obviously we all have some concerns, and we also know that the best defense is to take the appropriate precautions, and that's exactly what we're doing. I'm also very fortunate to be working with a truly excellent team of professionals who provide support for each other, and the fact that we can then actually focus on certain areas and also have other people focus on areas that they're expert in, it helps tremendously. So the burden is not on one person. It really is. We're lucky to have a strong network. We are so fortunate to be working with so many wonderful people. It's a very family-oriented group, even though we have a large number of employees at different campuses. I think the spirits are high. That's not to say that there isn't concern, because obviously there is and there should be. But we also know that we have a job to do, and if we're provided the right kind of equipment, and we are, and the right kind of information, that we can do that safely.
What is community spread, and how has that affected the Lehigh Valley?
First of all, I think it's very important to note that community spread right now is not a theoretical. It's an actual fact of life. In the beginning, almost all the cases that we had were connected to another individual that was known who had a case, or to the New York, New Jersey area. And then later on, as there was a hot zone that became evident in Montgomery County and Philadelphia, a lot of the cases were connected there. Now we have a number of cases that are appearing where there doesn't seem to be a definite linkage. That's what's known as a community spread. So at this point, it's here. How are we adapting to it? We're adapting to it in the way that the national guidelines tell you to, and that is what we need to do at this point in time is to prevent a surge, and that is where this whole concept of flattening the curve or bending the curve comes in. It means that we have it in our community, it's spreading in our community. We can mitigate that spread. We can change the course by practicing the guidelines that have been well promulgated. That means social distancing and avoiding discretionary trips outside of the house. And that's what we're asking people to do.
How is St. Luke's Pocono campus working to treat the influx of out-of-state hot zone COVID-19 cases?
Well, One of the things that I think is important is that we have certainly put out guidelines that people who are coming from hot zone areas, and that would certainly mean the New York City area, the northern New Jersey area, when they are leaving their home base, they need a self-quarantine for 14 days. That is absolutely imperative that they do that. In terms of when we're seeing people who are ill, and the Pocono campus certainly has more than its share of people who have COVID-19 or suspected COVID-19, it's been estimated that 80% of the visits to their emergency room are people who have either COVID-19 or highly suspect COVID-19 symptoms. What we're doing in those kind of situations is we're using the power of the St. Luke's network, and that means that we have the ability with multiple campuses to be able to stretch our resources, and that means we can transfer patients when that's necessary, we can transfer personnel, we can share knowledge, we can transfer equipment. All of that is helping us to combat the issue.
Please describe the symptom differences from a mild to a medium to severe case of COVID-19.
Well, the symptom complex that has been very widely popularized are the three symptoms where one would have a fever, shortness of breath, and chest pain. We do know that the most prevalent symptom in patients who have COVID-19 is fever. So it comes down to really the severity and the length. People who have much more severe symptomatology become very short of breath. They have lots of chest pain. They have prolonged fever. They may have changes in their mentation where they're not as alert. They may look like they're turning blue. Those are patients who obviously need to have hospitalization and have hospitalization quickly. On the other end of the spectrum, we have some patients who present with very mild transient elevations of temperature and a minimal amount of coughing. In those patients, obviously, we have to make certain that they don't have something that's easily attributable to another diagnosis like allergy or a common cold. When in doubt, we have to test those patients.
Have you seen the age demographics change based on the severities? And are you seeing that reflect in the local caseload?
Yes, we are. I mean, there's no question that the people that are hit the hardest are still the elderly, and particularly those who have underlying serious diseases. However, it is well to say that right now the most prevalent group is really the 20 to 45-year-old age group, and we are certainly seeing our share of those patients come hospitalized, and in some cases, they're quite ill.
Is there any expectation of recovery time with COVID-19?
Let me go over what the current protocol is for considering a patient to be recovered. And the current protocol is that someone who is considered to be recovered and can return to the workplace has to have at least 7 days from the onset of their symptoms to the time that they would return to work, provided that at least three of those days at the end, they are not having any major symptoms, and they're not having a fever that has been altered artificially with fever-reducing medications such as Tylenol or non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen. So the minimum amount of time that we consider someone to have, quote, recovered would be 7 days if all of those issues are met. On the other hand, patients who are very ill, who end up going on a ventilator, in many cases they can be on a ventilator for weeks. So the spectrum of difference is enormous. Luckily, the majority of patients that we're seeing, and that's certainly true nationally, don't have to be hospitalized. They can go home, they can be watched at home, and we give them things to look out for as to when they need to now come to get checked out.
Please describe the gown and safety personal protective equipment protocols that medical professionals take when working with COVID-19 patients.
The protocols that we follow are the ones that are certainly issued nationally, and we follow those to the letter. And that would mean anyone who is taking care of a known COVID-19 patient has to have a full gown, gloves, an N95 mask, and a face shield or a hood that would provide the ultimate protection. If we do that, then we know that our personnel are safe.
Does St. Luke's have policies to reuse equipment such as masks?
Right now, our supply is adequate, but we have certainly looked and are following protocols that have been established for the potential reuse of equipment like N95 masks, provided that we can be certain that they are intact. And in some cases, we are now able to actually sterilize them using certain types of ultraviolet radiation.
Is there universal health professional agreement that this pandemic will have a second and third wave of cases at a later time?
The short answer to that is no. There's very few things that we can say there's universal agreement on, except that I think almost everyone in the United States realizes that we are closer to the beginning than we are to the end of this. Whether there will be a second or third wave right now is totally conjecture, and I think the safest answer is we'll have to see. And the same is true with how long is this going to last. There are a lot of predictions based on certain modeling, and I certainly hope that the shorter predictions are correct, but we just don't know.
How has contact tracing been implemented?
All positive cases are reported to the local Department of Health and the State Department of Health. They initiate contact tracing when they feel that that is necessary. We also do our own in many cases when we feel that there is a particular need to do so. So between the departments of health that are both local and state, as well as our own, patients are being looked at and contact tracing is done.
What are the protocols when working with a COVID-19 patient who has passed on, and what are the next steps for their family?
First of all, funeral directors are notified in all cases of the cause of death, and so that they can take proper precautions, and they have their own guidelines in dealing with that. The families are also interviewed and told that if they have any symptoms at all, that they need to be tested, and we go over what the symptoms are so that they're sure of what they are looking for. But, asymptomatic contacts do not have to be tested at this point in time.
What steps and processes for St. Luke's University Health Network employees tasked with cleaning the facilities after a COVID-19 patient is seen or unfortunately has passed on?
There are well-established, rigorous cleaning protocols that take place with any patient who has an infection, and that certainly is true with COVID-19. So those protocols are followed to the letter and then some.
We will return after these messages.
For support of WDIY, we thank Mike Gosling, the Air Products Foundation, the Frederick H. Bedford Jr. and Margaret S. Bedford Charitable Foundation, the Century Fund, and the Charles H. Hoke Foundation.
This is WDIY Executive Director Greg Caponia with a special request for all of our listeners. Many of you support the arts in all of its forms. If you have tickets to a live theater concert, event, or any kind of performance and the show has been canceled due to the virus, please consider donating the money instead of asking for a refund. An event like this can severely damage or end arts organizations. Thousands of artistic professionals have jobs and healthcare needs, and they're all at stake. Please continue to support these organizations that need to survive through these cancellations. Thank you very much.
For program support on WDIY, we thank The Lodge and Cafe The Lodge, 427 East 4th Street, Bethlehem. In response to COVID-19, the Cafe The Lodge would like their customers to know they are currently serving orders for pickup only from a limited menu. All special events at Cafe The Lodge are on hold until further notice. Further details and updates are available at 610-849-2100 or cafethelodge.org.
We now return to Dr. Jeffrey Jerry. Senator Pat Toomey posted a video Saturday detailing his support for a hashtag masks for all movement where he is quoted as saying, "I would encourage people to make sure if they're going outside, cover up. Cover your nose and mouth. My mask will keep someone else safe, and their mask will keep me safe. I'm not suggesting that this is any kind of a guarantee, and it probably doesn't have a tremendous value for the person wearing the mask, but it probably does significantly reduce the risk that people could inadvertently transmit it," unquote. For clarity, does a homemade mask work?
I think it's first well to know that the first thing that people need to do in order to prevent the spread is to follow the guidelines that exist already. And that is the social distancing guidelines that we've talked about. And in most of the counties that are probably in your listening area, we're talking about shelter in place. In other words, do not go out, do not leave the house unless you're leaving for what we would consider to be an essential purpose, such as medical visits that can't be done virtually, to buy pharmaceuticals, to buy food or groceries, or to check on a loved one where there's no other way of doing that. Otherwise, the best way of avoiding the spread and obviously avoiding getting it yourself is to stay at home. Now, in terms of whether a mask is effective or not, as you know, there's lots of controversy with that. We do know that if you actually have the disease, that certainly wearing a mask when you're around anyone else would be almost mandatory. Outside of that, as Senator Toomey already alludes to, the protection that it actually gives the mask wearer from somebody else is really questionable at this point in time. So would we have an issue with that? No, we don't have an issue with people wearing a mask. And in fact, there are all types of websites, including on our own website, on some of the best ways of fashioning a mask out of common fabric that one would have at home. But we want to emphasize that that's not a substitute for staying at home unless one absolutely has to leave the house for an essential purpose.
Is it possible for some people to have a natural immunity to COVID-19?
This is very different than influenza, where there can be some cross immunities to some strains that were similar that one has been exposed to in the past. The reason why this is called a novel coronavirus is because it's expected that no one would have certain immunity to it because it is truly different than any other strain that's been around. That's not to say that some people have better host defense mechanisms against any kind of infection, and those are things that are being actively studied right now. We do know that there are certain things that might make people more susceptible, and certainly there are underlying illnesses that would make people have a more severe case, but as far as whether there is any built-up or natural immunity, that's still something to be ascertained.
What if you come in contact with someone who has mild symptoms or knew someone who may have mild symptoms?
What we're telling people at this point in time is to be aware of the symptoms that are characteristic of this disease. We are not telling people who don't have any symptoms or so-called asymptomatic people to be tested. So the main thing is to be aware of the respiratory symptoms that we've spoken about, including also a fever. If you develop any of those things and it's not easily attributable to another cause, then you might be a candidate for testing. And the best way of finding that out is we have a number of different ways. You can visit your family doctor. We have online visits. You can call our hotline, and you can describe the situation, and then they will tell you whether you are a candidate for testing, and they will also give you essentially a slip for testing if they feel that it's necessary.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, Doctor?
At this point in time, I think all of us realize that this is a significant worry for us, and it does affect the health and welfare of us as individuals and those of us who we love. And it's just something that we're going to have to get through together. And unfortunately, there isn't an easy fix for it right now. And the best thing that we can do is to practice all of the advisories regarding the stay-at-home, the social distancing. We know by looking at past epidemics that that can make a significant difference and bring this thing to an end. And there eventually will be an end, and it will bring it to an end much sooner with less damage. It's really undergoing the immediate discomfort and pain of having to do all the things that we've talked about in order to get a better outcome.
Well, Dr. Jeffrey Jerry, we thank you for making time to update our listeners in the Lehigh Valley and are grateful for all you are doing. For WDIY News, this is James Johnson.